It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born. And at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Jimmy, who doesn't love Jimmy?
I can't stand him.
Yeah, you know what? Your phone's never right, Jay Stu. What you need to do is
stick to wrestling.
Stick to wrestling with James Stewart.
Jared Carabas of DraftKings is the tribal chief of baseball, the podcast host of Baseball is Dead, and the Name Redacted podcast, America's most beloved podcast, Like a Pro on NESN 360, and the Baseball Hour with Tony Maserati on 98.5 The Sports Hub. But to me, he's my longtime friend and massive wrestling fan. Jared Carabas, welcome to the Stick to Wrestling podcast. How are you, my friend?
James Stewart, it's good to be here. It's good to be talking wrestling again. That's one of the things that I've really, really missed is being able to do a wrestling podcast. I haven't had a platform to talk wrestling in length in quite some time. So this is very exciting for me. And it couldn't have... We talked about doing this before what we witnessed last night at the Royal Rumble. So the fact that the timing lines up where this is probably the most excited I've been to talk professional wrestling, it's all lined up. I'm very excited for this.
And for those who don't know, Jared's known mostly as the baseball guy, but Jared and I talk more wrestling than we do baseball.
Yeah. Which... I mean, like, I have my wrestling friends where, because I mean, my friends in real life don't really like my friends don't like baseball. They don't like wrestling. So I'm just sitting here with my alone with my thoughts. So I'll talk to you about wrestling. I'll talk to Robbie Fox about wrestling. But those are my guys that I'll text because I need to get these thoughts out because I don't have a podcast and I don't have people in real life that I can share these thoughts with. So I'm very excited.
Well, you were my first choice for the rest in peace. What the hell was it called that I did with Riley? Oh God, I can't remember. Can't remember the name. Inside the Ropes. That's what it was called. And I was supposed to be the third member of From the Top Rope, which is the podcast that you did with Robbie Fox over at Barstool. But
yes,
neither one
correct.
Of those things happened. So here we are.
Here we are.
And Jared, the biggest story coming out of the Royal Rumble on Saturday night is WWE found a way to keep Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns, the main event for WrestleMania in LA, that's what we assume, and continue the Sami Zayn bloodline storyline without making the fans choose between the two, Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes. And what do I mean by this? Cody wins the men's Rumble to open up the show and has a clear path to the Universal Championship match, we assume, against Roman Reigns. But at the end of the show, in what may have been the best story in WWE history, Sammy turns on Roman with a nice callback to the Shield on the chair shot. The Usos are conflicted. Jey Uso walks out on the post-match beatdown, and there's no hesitation from Jimmy or Solo to beat down on Sammy. Paul Heyman standing in the background in shock of everything. The crowd is chanting, fuck you to Roman Reigns, which I would say is a little rude of the San Antonio crowd to acknowledge our tribal chief in that way. But mm-hmm. that's what Texans do, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. But there are fans like myself who thought Sammy should win the Rumble. Roman becomes paranoid and annoyed, and it ends up Sammy and Roman at WrestleMania. But that match now moves to Montreal in February. At least that's how we think the story is going to project out. That seems to make the most sense. But WWE in one night has lined up its two next world title matches, and it doesn't disrupt any of their original plans. And the WWE, I think, can use Montreal, the pay-per-view in February, to transition from Sammy and Roman to Sammy and Kevin Owens taking on the Usos for the tag team titles at WrestleMania. And there's not going to be a lot of people who are upset about it because it all seems to make sense. Just outstanding, Jared. Your thoughts on everything?
So I want to react to what you just said first before we get into the details of the end of the Royal Rumble, because I feel like that's its own conversation in its own. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the booking because I don't necessarily think it's set in stone, nor should it be. So the next premium live event, PLE, we're calling them. We grew up as these were pay-per-views. Now they're premium live events. Being in Montreal, the hometown of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, what I want to have happen, because it's almost like the popular, after getting a reaction like that last night and the buzz that it's created. So I just want to speak psychologically about being a wrestling fan. When I was a kid, being between whatever, 10 to 13 years old during the Attitude Era, going into a pay-per-view, the excitement of like, what's going to happen? Like what, things are never going to be the same on the other side. Sort of believing that things are real. Like when you would have like a stipulation where Vince McMahon would say, you know, Stone Cold, if you don't count the three on the Undertaker or Kane in the main event, you're fired. And you're like, are they really going to fight? I'm never going to see Stone Cold ever again. Like just,
and they fired him.
Yes. And they fired him. Just this idea that after tonight, things could potentially never be the same. And then waking up the next morning, almost like, was that a dream? And just feeling like rattled by the whole situation. For the first time since I was a kid, I felt that this morning. Being like the landscape of professional wrestling, because the bloodline turned on Sammy turned on on Roman. What's going on with Jey Uso? The bloodline apparently is just going to disintegrate because of this. Like it's the beginning of the end. You're when you're watching professional wrestling, you get used to different characters, different stables, different factions, different tag teams. They become a constant in your life. And for me, at least, because I always go back to X-Pac and Kane, my favorite tag team of all time. Yep. X-Pac and Kane. I loved them together. X-Pac was the guy that made Kane a human being. He humanized Kane, and they had great chemistry together, the big guy and the little guy. I love the fact that, because I love DX, that now Kane has like this backdoor in with DX. Like, even though he's not wearing green, he did say suck it, but he's not like an official like DX member. And then the entire time I'm just thinking like anxiety brain. I almost couldn't enjoy the ride because I was dreading the inevitable breakup. Like, you're always just thinking like, this is awesome, but I know it's not going to last forever. When is the breakup coming? And then when it comes, it's, for me, the X-Pac and Kane breakup. I told X-Pac himself, I was like, that I'm still not over it. Like, I will never forgive you for that. I'll never forgive you for that. The X-Pac and Tori Christmas story. But
great.
For now, we're at that point. Like, I've very, very, very much have enjoyed the Bloodline storyline. I buy the merch. I love the Bloodline. I love Roman. I've been a Roman guy, as you know, since day one. Even when everyone booed him when he was trying to get over as a babyface, I loved Roman. I've always loved Roman. He is in another stratosphere in terms of the work that he's put in right now. So, booking wise, if this storyline has gotten over to the point where Sami Zayn, the crowd reaction after Sami Zayn cracks Roman in the back with the steel chair, I don't remember an organic crowd pop like that, that wasn't a surprise return music hitting probably since CM Punk pinned John Cena in Chicago, Money in the Bank 2011. That's probably the last time I heard a crowd pop for something that they didn't necessarily know was coming, that wasn't necessarily a surprise return, because obviously Edge at the Rumble was incredible. So I feel like I love the Cody's return at the Rumble. He wins the Rumble. That was the correct thing to do. I personally would have kept his return a surprise, because his pop when he came out was not what I expected it to be. My interpretation of that, which was wrong, was that if you're going to tell us that Cody's coming back at the Rumble before it happens, that must mean there's even bigger surprise. And there wasn't. I mean, like, Booker T, love you, but if that's the big surprise return at the Rumble, or Nia Jax, sorry, but that doesn't do it for me.
Chelsea Green setting a record, her return.
Yeah, like, I would have kept Cody's return a surprise. I think it would have done more for him in the end in terms of winning the Rumble. But the Cody return story arc of my family has never had the WWE Championship, and Cody being the guy to do that after his journey and breaking off and doing AEW, coming back, winning the Rumble. I think that that story deserves its own angle. But the payoff to this Sami Zayn, Roman Reigns bloodline saga, I feel like that's not elimination shit. Like, that has to come to a head at WrestleMania. And I know that some fans probably hate the idea of Roman headlining WrestleMania both nights. But if you're the head of the table, you're the tribal chief, you should close the show both nights. It's your show, WrestleMania. So I would be in favor of Roman defending the title against Cody one night, and Roman defending the Universal title against Sami Zayn the next night. Both storyline. If you are in Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes even said this. He said, if your name is not Roman Reigns, you're not the best wrestler in the world. Like, it's end of discussion. It's undisputed champion for a reason. Roman Reigns is the best wrestler in the world. And I don't think that we've seen someone on top of their game like this since prime John Cena. So, and this is what Vince has wanted all along. He wanted Roman to be the next John Cena. Well, you got him on the opposite end of the spectrum. As much as John Cena got cheered in the beginning, that's Roman Reigns' heat right now. And it's not you suck at this heat, because there was that, right? Like, Roman Reigns did have, like, you know, your promo sucks, you also have the five moves of doom sucks. Now he has legitimate nuclear heat because he's so goddamn good at what he does. So if that was me, I would find a way to. And as much as I would love to see, Sammy and KO versus the Usos at WrestleMania, well, what just happened with Jay? Jay just walked out. Like, how do we end up at Jay going back to Jimmy and wanting to face KO and Sammy at WrestleMania? It looks like Jay is like, I don't want anything to do with this. Like, he was loyal to us. Like, you guys did Sammy dirty. So I'm interested to see where that storyline goes. But to sum it all up, I would love to have Roman headline both nights and kind of, I don't know who goes over. I think if Sammy goes, if Cody doesn't necessarily go over, fine. I think I can live with that. But Sammy being the guy to beat Roman after 900 plus days of being champion, yeah, sign me up for that.
Do you know the story that they've actually been telling you, Jared, since day one? Is that main event Jey Uso is the guy who should take over as the tribal chief and the champion. The problem is, WWE isn't actually going to do that. But that's the story that they've been telling you for 2.5 years now, is that it's Jey Uso who's going to get the comeuppance on Roman Reigns. But they're not going to do that. So then Sammy gets over organically through this entire process. And Sammy did an interview with Ariel Helwani where he's like, you know, when Vince was in creative control, I was never in the same shot with Roman, except for the one match that they did on SmackDown, and Roman choked him out in like 90 seconds or something like that. But once Triple H took over, they got in the room together, and Heyman's influence and all this stuff, and the trial of Sami Zayn, which was tremendous television. And I bring this up because, one, it was commercial free, which was by design. It went over what it should have. And it was also a ratings win. All this Sami Zayn stuff are ratings wins for WWE. The issue is, San Antonio sold out of Cody merchandise Fanatics can't keep Cody Rhodes merchandise in stock. So you've got the TV show with Sami Zayn that's doing great ratings, but the business side of it isn't where Cody Rhodes is. So you've got these two trains going at once, and Roman's selling, outselling everybody. I mean, it's not even close. But so they're trying to do both. And I think and this is in the words of Sami Zayn, he could be the WWE champion, but not the face of the company. I think people in WWE see Cody as being the face of the company and the WWE champion in the same way that Roman's been that way. And sadly, I think that's why Sami doesn't get the WrestleMania win, because Sami's WrestleMania win, like, yeah, he can do the talk show and everything, but he can't go to Saudi Arabia because he's not allowed there. But Sami also doesn't dress in business suits. He's not going to go to Wall Street, or when they take the company private, he's not going to do all that stuff.
Neither did Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I know, right? You're 100% right, Jared. You're 100% right. But that's why they had The Rock right there. Mm-hmm. So they had one and one A. Mm-hmm. So if there's a way to do Cody and Sami at the same time, which is kind of what they're doing right now, like we're big CM Punk guys, right? Me, not so much lately, but we'll see when he comes back to AEW, which I feel like is in play. Mm-hmm. But like they had CM Punk 434 days as champion, but they're really building the company around John Cena and The Rock, because that was the corporate match. And even after Danielson won the title at WrestleMania in New Orleans, he was in there with Kane, and that's a continuation of their previous story. But they're really featuring Evolution versus The Shield, because that's where they wanted to go. Like, The Shield swept Evolution in an elimination six-man match. That's a big fucking deal, Jared.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's what they really wanted, and they're like, oh, well, the fans want him as champion, so we'll just do that. To tie it all back, I could see a scenario where Roman retains against Sami in Montreal, and he retains in Los Angeles against Cody at WrestleMania. And they put the bloodline, they keep it going. Because you've still got Bobby Lashley, you've got Gunther, who had an amazing performance at the Rumble. And maybe they extend it out so that, yeah, Cody got this chance, but slipped on a banana peel and blew it. Right? And it's metaphoric for however the bloodline comes together to save the championship, to save Roman's spot. Because there's probably still more to be done with Roman. The one hesitation that I have is Roman feels a little beat up right now. There are times watching the show where he kind of gets up a little slow from the chair. He's sitting down during the entire War Games match until it's time to come in. So there's years of football, there's years of wrestling on him. And maybe he's winding down the bloodline story because, well, he's winding down. And he's got five kids, two sets of twins. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Right? Yeah, I agree. But I feel like he cut a promo after, I believe it was a house show, where he kind of hinted at going part-time or whatever.
What he is right now. He's only wrestling. I mean, I think he wrestled slightly more than MJF after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Like, I think he probably had about 10, 12, 11 matches.
Yeah.
10, 12, 11. Yeah. That doesn't make sense.
Which is great. But, like, I love that. Like, because it feels special. Yes. Like, he's like Brock, but he'll still show up for SmackDown. Like, he'll still go out there and cut a promo and make that feel like a moment that you have to tune in for. And it is. It always is. Whenever the bloodline comes out, it's like, all right, yeah, like this is a segment that I have to pay attention to because it's either setting something up or it's more character development for the other people in the bloodline.
And it's always Sami quality, Zayn. Jared. It always is quality. Always quality. It's always good. There's always something that you figure out there.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love when a guy puts himself in a position where you can tell that the WWE creative writers, they never anticipated that it would get over the way that it did. Because admittedly, I was not that big on Sami Zayn until this storyline. I would always look at Sami Zayn, and I'm sorry, I'm like Vince in the way where I'll look at someone's physique and be like, come on, like, what are we doing here? Like, put in
He's
some work.
He's the Intercontinental Champion. He's the guy that, you know, is giving you 4-star matches in the opening contest at the 9 o'clock block, all that stuff.
Yeah, I would just look at the physique and be like, I don't get it. And then when he started doing these segments with the Usos, now you see how funny he is. Now you see just how brilliant he is as an actor. The fact that he was able to crack the Usos as many times as he did without ever breaking himself. He broke Roman. And these are
the
guys.
The joke was great.
Unbelievable
thing is what you're referencing, and it's great.
Unbelievable, and like the handshakes that he would have with Jimmy, it was like I would rewatch though, and like when he started calling them my dog, I stole all that. Like I would like, you know, just like my friend. And then my friends don't watch wrestling, so out of nowhere, when they'd be like, yeah, like do you want to go to the gym? I'd be like, yeah, yeah, I'll see you at like 4 p.m. my dog. And they're like, where did that come from? And I'll take from Sami Zayn. So I love
the Usos. They like Waffle House. You guys want to go to Waffle House? And they're just like cracking and they're like leaning in like, yeah, we like Waffle House.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just love when a guy can get over to that level organically. Like obviously, you know, the writers see the crowd reactions and then they start building the story more around Sammy. But I don't think that was ever the intention. I don't think that when they added Sami Zayn to the Bloodline storyline that they ever thought that it would get here. And by here, I mean what we were just talking about. Like you compare it to like the Mega Powers, the best storyline since then. I said it's the best storyline since the original Kane and Undertaker storyline. I mean, those are two iconic, like, arguably Mount Rushmore professional wrestling storylines that we just compared the one that we saw come to a head last night. So and like I said, I was watching it live, and I was sitting on this couch literally like at the edge of my seat is an expression. I was physically at the edge of my seat. This was going on. Roman wins the match, and there were all these rumors about, is The Rock in San Antonio? Is The Rock going to come out here? They're going to set up a WrestleMania storyline here with Roman. And so I was not one of the people that were anticipating The Rock. I was like, how, like Sammy didn't get involved in the match. So he's out there. And I don't know if you saw this. There was a tweet going around. It was a close up on Sammy wearing the honorary Oos t-shirt, and you could see that there was a little snip on the neck.
Oh, I didn't see this. I'm kind of glad that I didn't. I tried to stay away from spoilers before the Rumble because I wanted to like live it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, I'm purposely avoiding text messages. Like I'll see this person text me, I'll be like, nope, not today. Like yeah. We'll talk after midnight. We'll talk after the show, right?
Yes.
Because
yes.
I want to have that organic surprise and that fun of the event.
Yeah.
The thing that I thought, like during the match when Sammy's hesitant to give Roman the chair during the Kevin Owens Roman match, I thought like, okay, this is the spot. And then I thought Kevin Owens was going to pull Sammy in front of him before Roman speared Kevin Owens into the barricade, which ultimately was the third spear, which led to the fourth spear in the ring and the back of the head. And I thought like, once Jey Uso is about to give the, oh God, I can't remember the name of the actual, and I don't want to disrespect the tribal. I can't think of the name of it. You have them because I saw your video on Twitter wearing them during the Roman match, and I can't think of what they are. I want to call them lays, but I know that that's not the proper term for it.
Oh yeah, I have it over there.
I don't know what it's called, but it's like a lay, except it's got the tribal.
Yeah, it's made out. It's made out of fruit. It's a fruit necklace.
Fruit necklace. I'll go with that because that seems more appropriate. But Jay's about to do it, and Roman's like, "No, no, no, no." And I'm like, "Oh, here comes the real test."
Mm-hmm.
Because beating Kevin Owens wasn't enough. The beatdown, Jared. The beatdown by everybody. And Roman's like in the corner, hanging out with Sammy. He's like, "Isn't this great?" And Sammy's like all concerned about it. And then steps in the way and the crowd, ooh. And then there's a couple teasers where Sammy has the chair and Roman's got his back. And Sammy's like, what are they doing? And then he does it, Jared. You were talking about how organic that reaction was. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you like, just to emphasize your point, like, that was such a great, like, that's 50,000 people with the same reaction because they're in. Mm-hmm. They're into this story and they're reacting, because years ago you'd do a beatdown like that for 20 minutes and the crowd would just dump all over it and not care, and they'd be walking out because it's too much heat. But because they've done so well on this story, that even Jey Uso just rolling out of the ring gets that ooh. And now everybody's tuning in to Raw or SmackDown, and that's the great progression of the story. This, Jared, this Bloodline story arc is just so special.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you. I don't want it to end, and I don't want it to end with Cody at all. But that's a whole different, there's a whole bunch of backstage politics with Cody and so on, so on, so on. But it should end with main event Jey Uso, but again, it won't. It should end with Sami Zayn. Again, it won't. But maybe we get Sammy in a suit on the way to Montreal and that changes.
I'm very intrigued, because usually you can kind of see where stuff is
going. I didn't have Sammy turning on the Bloodline, Jared. I had the Bloodline turning on Sammy. I didn't have Sammy turning on them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I would have been surprised either way. Like the fact that Sammy was the one to do it, they did it in a way where he didn't want to do it, which makes all the sense in the world. I think I would have been very surprised.
And he turns to Jey Uso and he's like, I'm sorry, dog.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think it would have been way more surprising if Sammy cost Roman the title. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, you're with the Bloodline. Like, you've got a history with Kevin Owens. He's best friend, best man, your wedding, whatever. So it's justifiable or explainable why he wouldn't want them to just pummel him with a steel chair while he's handcuffed to the ropes. But it would have made much less sense if Sammy had cost Roman the match so that Kevin Owens can win the title. Because it wouldn't have made sense going back to, like, the trial, where it's like, this dude has taken so many bullets for us and won matches for us. Why would that be the long con to then cost you the title at the Royal Rumble? Like, why would he have done that all along if he wasn't genuinely trying to be in the Bloodline? But then Roman's paranoia kind of creates this friction to where Sammy can say, Kevin's kind of just been straight up with me. He's one of my actual best friends. Why would I take all this shit from you when I've got Kevin right here that I would love to be able to protect, because you're just you're attacking him. Like, you won the match. Like, you're still the champ. This is beneath you. You don't need to do this. So yeah, I tweeted it as it was still going out. I was like, this is A++ storytelling. And I can't remember the last time that I was watching professional wrestling, AEW or WWE, and watching something where I was so, I guess, captivated by what I was about to see. And similarly, when Bray Wyatt came back, and you know, we had had all, like, the White Rabbit stuff, and we were waiting for the payoff. Is it actually Bray? When's it going to happen? How are they going to do this? I was glued to the TV when he actually came back. But that's a return that you're excited for. I'm talking just straight up. You're telling us a story, you're building it week by week, and you're keeping our interest to have this payoff be just chef's kiss down to the last details. What I was saying to you, like, there's a camera shot, go back and watch it, of they cut to Jimmy Uso, and his facial expression is just pack of hyenas, just like, I despise Sami Zayn, like, I'm ready to rip your head off. And he's not the main focal point of what's going on here. Like, he's the first to kick Sammy in the face, but just his facial expression, like, he was not just Jimmy, but that stands out to me. Everyone who was involved was acting like the hard cam was on them the entire time. So it made it feel so real, so special, and just one of those all-time, like, you won't forget where you were when you saw it type WWE moments.
Heyman is always like that. Jey Uso has developed into that. Jimmy Uso has developed into that. Roman, like the one from Roman that stands out to everybody is when Jey Uso months ago goes, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief thinks. And Roman's head just pops up and is like, oh, really? Now we're going to have a conversation. It's like, and just all of those little details, all those little details that go into it. And just to, you mentioned AEW and their storytelling. The best story that AEW has told in their existence is the Adam Hangman Page story and Adam Page's chase to the championship. What AEW failed to do was explain every detail on television. You had broken details, whether it be on the Being the Elite YouTube channel, some of it on TV, some of it on social media. The WWE, and this is why they're the best at what they do, and I think right now with Hunter in charge of creative, they're widening the gap between themselves and AEW, and I don't think the stuff that happened in Chicago helped AEW at all, even though they're trying to come back from that. But the WWE makes sure that you know every detail. They grind it into your head. And the trial of Sami Zayn rewarded the fan base who followed every detail by recapping it in an entertaining way, not just some video package thrown together at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They did it live. They did it with passion. They did it with emotion, and they let the crowd participate in it. And that's why WWE is just leagues above AEW. But the question is, does WWE get to this point without an AEW? We don't know that answer. We hope that they would. But the change really came when Vince had to leave creative and Hunter took over, and Hunter's got Michael Hayes and Bruce Pritchard and wrestler participation. Right. So, and Paul Heyman, who some love as a creative genius, some hate as a creative genius. So, you know, Paul Heyman also gave you the Viking War Raiders trying to do bingo in a car when he was creative director of Raw, but that's another story for another time. So, but this bloodline thing is great, and we've done 30 minutes on it, and it's, we both don't want it to end, Jared. We both don't want it to end, but no. You know, we'll see where it takes, and it's a great story, but it's special. It's a special time to be a wrestling fan. Triple H in his press conference after the show doesn't think The Rock is in the cards for WrestleMania this year, but he wouldn't rule out next year. The Rock at this point just seems like a goose that they're just chasing. Whether it's he's not in shape to do it, he's not in ring shape to do it, he doesn't have the time to do it. I personally think he doesn't want to lose to Roman. That's why he doesn't want to do it. Triple H also is like, yeah, The Rock doesn't want to half-ass it. Where do you stand on The Rock? What do you think is the reason why The Rock isn't doing WrestleMania? I know you're in wrestling circles. You may have some intel on this.
Yeah,
And if you don't want to share it, that's okay too.
Because I don't know if it's true. And like, this is not like, I'm a baseball guy, so it doesn't matter if I'm wrong, but I can say that, like, I heard a rumor that they don't have the best relationship.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but
I think it is. I think it is. And I think it's part of the reason why The Rock wants to win.
Yeah. I have no idea. It just, for me as a wrestling fan, obviously I love The Rock. I watch his movies specifically on planes. That's the only time where I'll watch a Rock movie. I've seen them all. I've seen them all, but I wait until I'm on like a cross country flight and then I bang out like three of them. But I mean, I'm more of a wrestling fan than a Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie fan. And I have all the respect in the world for him. I would love to see him come back, but there is, I don't know if cringe is the right word, but I hate how we as wrestling fans, the wrestling community, put so much stock in like, please come back to us. Like, please. Cause there's a ton of talent. Like just the Sami Zayn stuff alone would be enough for me to get super excited for a WrestleMania main event without having to go back to the well of The Rock. Of course I would love to see Roman versus The Rock. Of course I would. Who wouldn't want to see that? That's a dream match. Like we throw around the word dream match a lot. I've seen some people use the term dream match about some matches that I couldn't give a shit less if I ever saw. But Roman versus The Rock is 1000% a dream match. I just don't like how the way, and like to your point about it being a great time to be a wrestling fan, I would say one of the best times to be a wrestling fan. It just seems desperate to, when everyone is like, oh, is The Rock coming back tonight? Oh, The Rock. Like, I don't even, it just, I don't even want like the suspense of it or the rumors to be floating around like, oh, The Rock could come back at the Rumble. And then when he doesn't come back, then the entire show is considered a disappointment because The Rock doesn't come back. Like, I don't care for that. And if there's no Rock at Elimination Chamber or he comes out at WrestleMania, I don't want it to have to be a disappointment. And I'm not necessarily saying, like, just say that you're never like, no, of course, fans like surprises, like, especially in wrestling. We love surprises. We love to be surprised. But when that surprise, it becomes an expectation and it doesn't happen, it's just unnecessary disappointment to have to go through. So I personally, I know, like I said earlier, when fans were waiting for The Rock's music to hit to come out and save Kevin Owens, that wasn't even really a thought in my head. I was just letting it play out. And because I didn't give a shit if The Rock was coming back, I enjoyed that way more than someone that was probably waiting for The Rock's music to hit. But again, Stone Cold Steve Austin, prime example. I interviewed him summer of 2021, maybe, and point blank asked him, you know, like, are you happy with the way that you left your career? Like, as in terms of like, not like your final match wasn't a match that fans had any idea at the time that it was your last match. You didn't get like the proper send off from the fans. Like, are you good with that? And he's like, yep. Like, I don't want to come back and be some like half-ass watered down version of Stone Cold Steve Austin. I would rather, you know, fans remember the Stone Cold Steve Austin that existed when I was in the ring. And then he comes back and there's more.
I think that was as much Kevin Owens as anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Kevin Owens was brilliant in this long play to get Steve Austin in the ring.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's doing it again, like basically saying like, oh no, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to come back. I think he'll there's a good chance that, you know, we've seen the reports and the rumors that they put a nice offer on the table for him to be Roman's opponent at WrestleMania.
There was a rumor about being Brock's opponent. Yep. I think the perfect matchup, Jared, is John Cena.
Yeah. I mean, Austin, all of those are dream matches. Cena,
the crossover of the Ruthless Aggression era and the Attitude era. And it doesn't bother anybody else's story.
Right.
It's just like, here's this video game matchup we're going to put together and we're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And Cena, by the way, is going to do the right thing in the same way that Cena let Undertaker squash him at WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Cena's going to go in there. Austin hits all his high spots and everybody goes home happy because mm-hmm. everybody wants to see Steve Austin win. Nobody, I don't think, I'll just speak for myself. I don't want to see Steve Austin lose to Roman Reigns, and I don't want to see Steve Austin as the Universal Champion. So that match to me doesn't add up.
Right. Because I don't think, like, Roman beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania didn't really do anything for Roman at that point. Unless he was going to
beat
the
Streak.
Because
they had blown it on Brock.
Correct.
3 years before.
Correct. If the Streak was still alive, that does a ton for Roman. But because the Streak had ended, that win for Roman was more just like, congrats, you beat like an old broken down Undertaker. Like, that was it. So.
And then the next year they do New Orleans where it's, Roman has beaten The Undertaker at a WrestleMania. Brock has beaten The Undertaker at a WrestleMania. And oh, by the way, there's a championship on the line and Roman's going to win until they hit the ring and the fans are chanting CM Punk playing with a beach volleyball. It's actually a bloody match. If you actually go back and watch the thing, it's actually pretty good, mm-hmm. but it's just a different style and the audience didn't care. So the theory, at least at the WrestleMania after party that year, was Vince hit the talk back button to the referee and changed the finish. And that's why you got the great video of Brock throwing the belt at Vince in anger because be done. And Vince was like, we can't do it here. And then they do it at SummerSlam and there's a whole bunch of hocus pocus. But that was a theory going around amongst wrestlers and people at the New Orleans after party was Vince changed the finish on the talkback during the match. Like, that was supposed to be Roman's crowning moment and the crowd didn't want it. Crowd was too busy playing with a beach ball and chanting CM Punk and
I believe that. That's something.
Oh, I totally believe that. I totally believe that. But you bring up something about like surprises and crowd disappointment because there weren't surprises. Not a lot of surprises in these Royal Rumble matches, Jared. And I think people looking for surprises the last few years have been kind of disappointed. The last big one was Edge's surprise return, I think. But what this and why I like this Royal Rumble match, even if the finish was predictable with Cody winning, was in the course of an hour and 11 minutes, we now know future matches, whether it be for WrestleMania or Elimination Chamber or future stories going forward. We know Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley. We know Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul. Edge continues his battle with Judgment Day. Dominic versus Rey Mysterio. And by the way, Rey didn't show up for the Rumble because he was injured the night before on SmackDown. Strowman versus Omos. And yes, I hear you rolling your eyes at that. They're going to do something with McIntyre and Sheamus. There's an undercard match at some point of Theory versus Ricochet. But probably the bigger thing short of Cody winning was Gunther going an hour and 11 minutes from the number one entrant as the Intercontinental Champion, who really didn't have a lot of buzz around him. Now he's a star. And it's somebody who, before the Rumble, I thought should be talked about as somebody who could beat Roman down the line. Now more people than ever see Gunther in that light of like, he's got the size, he's got the ability, he doesn't have the promo, but he's got every other intangible that makes him a marketable force going forward.
I was impressed, but still not a fan.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Hey, I walked out the day that Walter beat Pete Dunne for the UK NXT title. I was at the concession stands because I was a huge Pete Dunne fan. So it took me a while to get around on Walter and Gunther, but you know he's at least in the conversation. But what overall did you think of the Royal Rumble match, Jared?
Your point, it was both. Both winners were extremely predictable.
Yep.
Like at no point did I feel like Rhea Ripley was not winning. When we got down to like 25, I was like counting the spots and I was like, where's Cody? Like they can't have him come out at 30. Like that's lame.
Coming out at 30.
And they had him come out at 30. It's like, why would you hype up his return like this just to have him come out at 30? I mean, like he still got some time in, but I don't know. I don't know that I would have had him because I don't want to say that it cheapens it to win coming out from the 30 spot. Like you have the guy like the Batistas of the world where it's like big name, a little bit older, hasn't been in the ring much. You have him come out at 30 because you want to preserve that. You want like a big burst or whatever. It's fucking Cody Rhodes. Like you can have Cody come out at like 20. Like what did Edge come out at? Like he was. I mean, not that he won, but he came out way before 30.
23, 24, something like that.
Yeah.
My notebook's over there on the table.
Yeah. So
Cody told Bleacher Report, I think it was, that he wasn't medically cleared fully
until the day of. Yes.
Which I find a little hard to believe. And I could probably do some backtrack research on that and see if that's actually true or not. I'm not going to because it adds to the aura of Cody winning.
Yeah.
That, oh, I wasn't medically cleared, even though I was already an entrant in the match. Like you can't bullshit a bullshitter, Cody. So this is my love hate with Cody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like his story on TV is so great. But then he says and does these things in interviews or behind the scenes, and I'm like, how do I root for that?
Mm.
You see where I'm conflicted, Jared?
Yeah, there were a couple of you're like me. Like after you watch the like premium live events, you probably consume every piece of content that you can
Everything.
After that.
Everything.
So I'm sure that you also noticed that Cody like used the same lines in multiple interviews. Like it was just like recycled. Like he tried to say it in like a very sentimental way, but. As like,
apologizes for being crying Cody at the press conference, one-on-ones, all of
yes.
it. With respect to Cody, which kind of means I don't respect him, he's never seen a microphone he doesn't love.
Yeah. Yeah. And he kept going like during the press conference, like, I want to answer more questions. And it's like, well, we have Triple H coming out next. So like, let's get to Triple H, like someone who may have,
we can't let this reporter be the last question.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to like Cody. I'm trying hard, to see man. Him. Yeah. I don't not like him. I don't not like Cody.
Right.
I just am trying to, it's hard to, once you see a guy a certain way, it's kind of hard to like see them as like the main event, like how I play up like the gender thing, right? Like gender, 3-man band, and now I have to take him seriously as a main event world
great
champion.
Great champion.
My champion.
if Jinder Mahal though wins the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 33 and then fights Orton and wins the title, it's a little bit more believable. But because Gronk's friend won, Mojo Rawley won the WrestleMania Battle Royal and then lost some random number one contenders match to Jinder, made it a little bit harder to swallow.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways.
But Jinder looked right with the belt.
Jinder looked amazing. He looked like $1 million. Like that guy, I'm very upset that I might have been one of the only people to actually give him a chance as a legit champion. He's my champion and he always will be. What were we talking about before that?
We were talking about Cody. We were talking about how the Rumble had no surprises and how that may have changed people's perspective on how that Rumble was.
Yeah.
I think it was a good storytelling and progressing storylines going forward Rumble.
Yeah, match. That's exactly what it was. It served its purpose. And, you know, if you want to make like the Christmas morning comparison, it's like, yeah, we got a bunch of stuff that we needed, right? Like we
got, you know, socks, we got boxers.
We got like everything that we needed.
We got the lamp because our lamp died.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, like my automatic car starter broke and you fixed it for me and then put it in a box. Like, thank you. Like, I need that. Like, that's a gift that I needed. But I wanted to open up a box and be like, holy shit, I can't believe you got me this. And like, that just didn't happen. Like, love seeing Booker out there, but like, we didn't even get Hurricane Helms this year, which sucks. Like, I was hoping for, obviously not anyone from AEW, but more like Forbidden Door entrance in the men's
Rumble. Jay White was a good rumor out there.
Yeah, there, like Cardona was another one. You end up with Chelsea Green, which was great.
She set a record her first night back. Very excited she sure about did. That. And she's allegedly going to be this Karen comedic character.
Yes. Yeah. I
which
saw
those
that.
Promos are going to be outstanding.
Yeah. I don't know. The day of the Rumble and the days leading up to the Rumble, like my excitement is around, like, cause I try to make an event out of it. Like, I'll invite my friends over, like even the ones that like don't even like, I invited Pete Blackburn over. He doesn't know anything about wrestling, but surrounding yourself with people to where it's like 3, 2, 1. And then someone's theme music hits that just jogs an immediate reaction, right? Like, I don't know why this is the first name that came to mind, but say, you know, you get 3, 2, 1, and then you start to hear Enzo Amore's theme. Like, I would be like, holy shit. Like, you just like that excitement. And the fact that you get 30 opportunities for that is awesome. So yes, the Royal Rumble served its purpose by setting up all these different angles. I think Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins is going to be awesome. Like,
I do too.
I'm very excited for that. So it's not like we didn't get things to take from it, but I needed, like, I remember like the Bubba Ray return in Philly. That was awesome. Like, there's just different, like, you got to have at least one of those, right? Like, you have 30.
They probably thought it was Booker T. I was anticipating Kane at 29 or 28 or something like that.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones because he's got the most that. Like, just keep going with Kane. You know, he chokeslams Elias out. Like, it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, like, it's not like every spot was accounted for and necessary. Like, you've got the Kofi spot. Do you need Woods back-to-back especially? Like, no. Like,
which Kofi, by the way, blew for the second year in a row.
He did. And when I heard the New Day theme, I originally thought that it was Big E's return. So when the New Day theme hit, I popped because I was like, fuck yeah, like Big E's back. And then it was Kofi. And I was like, all right, okay. And then it hit again. I was like, oh, Big E's back. And then it was Woods. And I was like, fuck. So yeah, I don't know. Even like when I thought I was surprised, I wasn't.
Well, and so they set up the men's match to keep the stories like they had. Gunther and Sheamus, which is a rematch and an ongoing story from Clash at the Castle, the Intercontinental Championship. Sheamus's goal is to beat Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. That's still an ongoing thing, so that made sense. The Miz and Gargano still have a thing. The Miz and Kofi have a long-standing thing. Karrion Kross seems like a wrestler without a journey anymore because I think he's kind of fizzled out. And if they let Scarlett work, I got news for you, she'd be pretty good. Mm-hmm. But maybe they don't want that. McIntyre and Sheamus being the Bang Bros, you know, just being the tag team and knocking everybody out. And, Brock comes out at 12, Lashley comes out at 13. So there's that story. Rollins at 15. And by the way, Becky Lynch was 15 in the Women's Rumble. So there's like, you know, there's that synergy going there. Ray is supposed to come out. He doesn't. Dominic comes out next. So that works. You have all of Judgment Day in the ring when Edge comes out at 24.
I hated that, by the way, for a couple of reasons. Number one, explain it during the show. Like, obviously, they're not going to say, like, you know, Rey Mysterio injured himself on SmackDown and that's why he didn't come out. But how hurt is he that he couldn't do like a spot backstage where like Dominic takes him out? And if Dominic takes, that's what they tried to tell you, because Dominic walks out at what was it, 18?
18.
Dominic comes out at 18 and he's holding Ray's mask. So they're trying to tell you that he beat him up. What, it would have been a way better story because you just wasted a spot knowing that Ray can't come out. Why not have Dominic beat up Ray backstage and then Dominic is 17? Now you have another spot. Like, you just completely wasted a spot.
Dominic comes out to Rey Mysterio's music with the mask.
Yes. They've done that in the past, haven't they? Like, I can't remember. Someone got beat up and ended up taking someone's spot in the Royal Rumble.
So the Women's Rumble match, I think it was in Houston that Becky Lynch won.
Know they've done it in the men's.
Becky Lynch ended up winning the Women's Rumble match the year that she lost to Asuka in the opener. And she came out because Lana was down with an ankle injury.
Becky comes out and talks. Why am I thinking like Test was involved in this?
I believe that one too. I believe Test was involved it long ago. But the one that I remember more recently was Lana's down, ankle injury. Dave Finley is one of the agents out there. Becky comes out and is like, she can't work. Let me go to the ring. And Dave Finley, who's a crooked Irishman like I am, you know, just says, okay, go ahead. And Becky ends up winning the Women's Rumble match illegally.
Yeah. Like, so the whole time, after Dominic comes out, after Ray doesn't come out, I'm thinking that when it gets down to like the final four or the final two, or Cody eliminates the last guy and he thinks that he's won, someone comes out and it's like, well, technically there were only 28 eliminations because Ray never came out.
Right.
So it's
Joe Henning. Joe Henning is still like, hey, I've been in the Rumble match for like 600 days.
They it's not like the Rey Mysterio injury happened that day. They had plenty of time to come up with some sort of creative idea. Like, if you're going to burn his spot, give it to someone else or do some sort of funky angle at the end. Like, you can still put Cody over and have him win it, but it was just like an unexplained thing that there was no resolution to. And I was like, what the hell is this?
I think there was one other unexplained thing, and it is relevant to the Women's Royal Rumble match, which was the last 3 minutes were exciting, but Rhea Ripley comes out at one. She walks a little bit and then holds her ribs a little bit. And then she's kind of off and on holding her ribs as she gets to the ring. When she's in the ring, she forgets that Beth Phoenix speared her during the men's match. Mm-hmm. And part of me was expecting Beth Phoenix to be a disruptor in the Women's Royal Rumble match, because when she did her run in during the men's match, she was dressed to wrestle.
Correct.
Get all of her gear on. So I'm like, Rhea comes out at one and I'm thinking, oh, Beth comes out at two. They do that. They get that out of the way. And when she didn't, I kept anticipating Beth coming out later on in the match. And instead, I got Nia Jax's music before the 10 count even began. So Nia Jax continues to botch things, including her entrance, right? So there's a storyline hole there, which was a little frustrating.
I don't want to be mean.
Oh, please be mean. As long as it doesn't cancel you, because I don't want you to get canceled.
I don't want to be mean, Jimmy Stewart, but
I can bleep this out too.
Like, when it comes to being a baseball guy who covers actual, like one of the four major sports, because I don't want to say like professional wrestling isn't a sport. They're some of the greatest athletes in the world, in my opinion. But when you're covering a sport like baseball, you can get on a guy for shitty performance and this and that. But when you're watching professional wrestling, it's like, all right, yeah, the outcome is predetermined. Like, they don't have any control over that. But as it pertains to Nia Jax, when it comes to watching professional wrestling as a WWE fan, there are performers where even if I don't like you, I still respect you because of what you're doing, what you're putting your body on the line. With Nia Jax, she might be male or female, the only performer where I just am like, get the fuck out of here. Like, she hurts people. It doesn't seem like she has any remorse when she does.
She doesn't.
Like, she has this like ego about her.
She's the Rock's cousin.
Yeah, like when she's in the ring and she's like screaming, like a lot of that to me does not come across as like in character. It comes across as like entitled and you think highly of yourself, but you're hurting people and you're careless and you don't learn from your mistakes. There are plenty of wrestlers, like wasn't it Seth Rollins that accidentally kneed Cena in the face and broke his nose?
Yep.
That was Rollins. Like, Rollins had that happen. Rollins had the incident with Sting.
The turnbuckle powerbomb, yep.
So, I mean, accidents happen. But, like, the buckle bomb, he's done that a million times. I think that was a freak accident. The knee to Cena, like, that's a freak accident. But with Nia Jax, she was just so careless and reckless. And, like, that's, like, the first thing about being a professional wrestler is taking care of your opponent, making sure that they feel safe when they're working with you. And if I were working with her, I would not feel safe. Like, it, like, once is an accident, twice, okay, maybe. But then if you just keep doing it and doing it and doing it, that says to me that you don't give a shit. Like, you don't care about protecting your opponent. You care about, like, I'm this big monster and I want to look strong and I want to look like I'm actually like, didn't she close fist punch? Was that Becky Lynch?
It was Becky Lynch. It was the night that Becky has that iconic pose, amongst with the bloody the fans face. With the bloody nose. Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Like,
and that's Custer not a, knocked her out of Survivor Series.
That's all not that. A mistake. Like, no. that's just
Nia's hurt Charlotte Flair. She's hurt countless others.
Kyrie Singh, maybe
Kyrie Singh. Yep. That's another one.
She's just like, I just don't get it. Like, I get that you're The Rock's cousin, but you ain't The Rock and you ain't the Usos and you ain't Roman Reigns and you're not Solo. There's nothing special about her. It's not like her promos are good. Her in-ring work is not good. Like, she's been out of the ring for what, 2 years? And did she use any of that time to get in any better, like, physical condition? No. So I don't get it. Like, I always try to not be a hater, right? Like, if I don't like your promo work, if I don't like your in-ring style, whatever, like, I'll keep my mouth shut. Like, I'm just like, whatever. Cause I know, and this is not just like a wrestling take. This is like an in-life take. Like, if I know that something is popular, but I don't get it and I don't like it, it's not for me, I can at least come to the conclusion that it's just not for me. Like, I respect that you are doing something that other people like. I don't have to like it, but if other people like it, that's awesome. Good for you. Like, you have an audience. I don't know how anyone could watch professional wrestling and be like, fuck yeah, Nia Jax. Like,
I don't know anybody who likes Nia Jax either, by the way.
Yeah, but I'm sure she's a great person.
There are wrestlers who like her, but I don't know any fans who are like, oh, Nia Jax, like, let's go.
No, and
by the way, I felt this way about the Big Show for a time too. And then I went to a WrestleCon and he's got a line for like miles. And I'm like,
sure,
where did I miss the Big Show?
But yeah, like, I mean, because Nia, I guess I can call her a friend of a friend. Like we have mutual friends, and
sure,
I'm sure she's a great person. That you can be a great person and also just like suck at what you do. And yep. And I don't think that she
I've worked
is
with
a,
many of those people in media over the years, Jared.
Right? Like so I feel bad being critical of her, but at the same time, like it, there's a difference between oh, I scooped someone up to like slam them on the mat and I forgot to tuck their neck and like I they landed on their side and they cracked their rib. Like that's on me. Like I fucked that up. You can't fuck up closed fist punching one of the faces of the women's division. Like you can't do that.
Jared,
like,
she sandbagged Rhea Ripley.
Yes.
Jared, she sandbagged Rhea Ripley on the body slam.
Yes. Like I don't
and
Rhea's get it.
Like, okay, F you, I'm going to pound on you and you're going to take the riptide. And if I drop you on your neck, oh, well, that's your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was genuinely when her music hit, I was like, why? And then I looked at Twitter and because that's why you say you don't look at Twitter because you don't want spoilers and things like that. I look at Twitter to see if my feelings are justified, to see like, oh, I feel this way. Is anyone else with me? And she came out. I searched Nia Jax. All the tweets were like, we didn't ask for this. I bookmarked my favorite tweet because I was like, I'm going to use this later on for my own purposes, like once baseball season started. But this dude tweeted out, it was four images. The first one was the guy taking off the headphones. And then it was this Randy Orton clip.
I can't do this.
And then it was this. And then it was this.
Why? Oh God, fucking why?
So that, like, it was very much that reaction across the board. WWE Shop tweets out her new T-shirt because originally a lot of us thought it was a one-off, and then not. When you put out a T-shirt, you're now saying she's back full time, and all the replies are like, why? Like, why
my,
is
my
this not a
one tweet on this, Jared? My quote tweet on this was, you're not Naomi.
Yes. And Naomi tweeted out like a heart because I'm sure a lot of people were like, why is Naomi not in the, like, I thought Naomi was going to be the number 30 entrant, and that would have been the surprise pop that I was looking for.
We were all looking for that. Yep.
All night, I was looking for some sort of surprise pop in the Rumble, and Naomi at number 30, that would have done it for me. And yep. Instead, we get Nia Jax, who I just like. There's guys and girls that you hate as professional wrestlers, and it's because they want you to hate them. And then there's people like Nia Jax, where it's like, I don't get, like, what would you say you do here? What are you good at? And you would think that, like, when Triple H takes over, that they're going to start making better and smarter decisions, and then something like that happens, and you're like, okay, who signed off on this? Who asked for this?
Who suggested it, and who approved it, Jared? That's my question on all these decisions. Mm-hmm. So who was in the room and was like, you know what, we should bring Nia Jax back? And then Triple H,
she got
like,
a
yeah,
pop.
Pal, that's...
She got a pop.
Well, it's the surprise pop because you're not expecting it. Like when you hear music that you're not expecting, that's the ooh ah pop, right?
Yeah.
Like that's how I gather that.
Yeah.
Like it's not the Jake Roberts pop from the Rumble in 95 or 96 where it's like, oh shit, Jake Roberts is back because you know the theme.
Right.
That Nia Jax pop was like, oh fuck, she's back.
Yeah.
But you still react to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't do anything for me.
All right. We've spent 5 minutes shitting on Nia Jax. I think that's more than enough. what else is on your wrestling agenda, Jared? Do you have any other takes as we kind of wrap up here?
You know, not really. Am I in the minority by saying that I do want to see Lesnar and Lashley again?
No, I want to see it too. I'm with you. I want to see the third match.
Okay.
Like I think that Lashley winning the title at the Rumble last year was a major upset. I think Brock getting a fluke pin at one of the Saudi shows on Lashley was a major upset. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested. Brock is doing everything he can to make Bobby Lashley. And there's a part of me that thinks that Brock is just like, Lashley is like at a point in his life, and I think it's a military mindset that he has, where like, I'm the baddest. I need these wins. I can't lose to anybody and make it look bad. And I think Brock is like, you're paying me how much? What do you want to do, Bobby?
Yeah. Yeah. I have become...
Brock is at a point in his career where he's like, you're giving me $13 million a year. I don't know if that's the number, but it sounds right. Yeah. So like, you want me to work with Theory. You want me to work with Lashley. You want to work Logan Paul, Gunther, Keith Lee, anybody. What do you want to do for business? Okay, mm-hmm. done. But I think Brock wins at WrestleMania, by the way, in saying all of that. I think Brock has a definitive victory over Lashley for WrestleMania, unless Lashley is going to be the challenger for Roman if Roman retains, in which case Lashley should win, and then they push Lashley into the title picture.
They could do that, yeah. I would say over the past year, I've become quite the Bobby Lashley fan.
Oh, he's great.
I wasn't big into the Hurt Business. I didn't love that, but solo babyface Lashley, I've been into it. I've enjoyed it. One name that we haven't mentioned this entire time, and I'm shocked and stunned that we haven't done that. Bray Wyatt.
Bray Wyatt.
The Naomi Feel the Glow match.
Here's why, Jared, because I'm not into Bray Wyatt's character.
Yeah.
And that's a me problem. Like, I'm glad he's back. He seems happy. He seems to have gotten through a lot of his issues that got him away from wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm not there with his character. And I think that's probably why I pushed it to the back burner, at least in talking about it on this podcast historically, the last, you know, few weeks and months since he's come back. So I'm here for your thought on Bray Wyatt.
Okay. So here's where I'm at on Bray Wyatt, as an unapologetic Bray Wyatt honk. I will tell you up front, I love everything that Bray Wyatt does. I do. When he came back, I was very excited to see what was going to happen, especially, I mean, the way that they brought him back made me very excited for where this is going to go. I haven't loved what has transpired since his return. My first thing, because I will admit that especially during baseball season, I follow WWE and AEW through YouTube. Like, I'm not sitting down and watching. Yeah, I'm not sitting down to watch Raw 3 hours. I'm not sitting down to watch SmackDown for 2 hours. I just can't do it during baseball season. But I will seek out what I am interested in. I have not missed a Roman Reigns segment, a Bloodline segment, and especially like all the Bray Wyatt stuff. So when Bray Wyatt comes back, full disclosure, when he starts his program with LA Knight, my first thought is, who the fuck is LA Knight? I had no idea who this guy was before this program. So you bring Bray Wyatt back after 2 years with all this pop and circumstance, and I'm supposed to care about this feud with a dude that I have no idea who this is. I don't know who he is. You haven't explained to me who he is, like, during the course of this feud. Why do I care? Like, why does he have a problem with Bray Wyatt? Why does Bray Wyatt have a problem with him? It feels like a very pointless, baseless feud. There's so many people, and I already know what the answer is. There's so many people that Bray Wyatt could have returned to have a feud with that would have been a great way to be like, welcome back, let's fucking go. You put him with LA Knight, who I don't know anything about. I don't know why. I don't care. I don't care about him because I don't know him. I don't know his backstory. I don't know anything. But the answer is because a lot of guys, and this is like stuff that has been said publicly, it's very, very hard, if not impossible, to come out on the other end of a feud with Bray Wyatt looking good. That's why guys don't want to work with him. Like, how am I supposed to go into this and then come out of it looking good? It's very hard. So they figure, all right, we'll throw this fucking guy in with him because he wasn't here when Bray Wyatt was here last. It's new blood. It's fresh. It's clean. But I just felt like Bray Wyatt's first feud had to be with someone where there was some history. because then you're strapping a rocket to his ass to I guess relaunch in the WWE. What I haven't loved is we've basically blown the Bloodline storyline for an hour because of how amazing it is. And this has been told over months and months and months with Bray Wyatt's return and, you know, Alexa Bliss versus Bianca Belair. That match didn't need to happen on that card. The only reason why it happened on that card was to further her storyline with Bray Wyatt. It was for the end where they teased the connection to Bray Wyatt.
And I thought Bliss was going to win because of some Bray Wyatt hocus pocus
interference. Yeah. That was the only reason why that match was even on the card. And you have like all like the Firefly Funhouse characters. Now you're bringing, like, they teased Uncle Howdy for like 2 fucking months. And then we still don't know who it is. We still don't know. Like, he attacked Bray Wyatt, but then he also attacked LA Knight during this match. So we don't know, like, what's the connection here. I would like more answers to this storyline sooner. Like, paint the picture better and land the plane, because this is all still like, when did he come back? That was what,
October? June?
No, really?
Was it the Extreme Rules in pay-per-view? Extreme Rules in Philly, which would have been October.
Okay. I thought
it was, I mean, I'll Google it right now.
Yeah, find out exactly
why it was. 35 years old, Florida, early life, Nexus, Wyatt family, New Faces of Fear, Return of the Wyatt family.
Actually, you know what?
Deleters of the World.
I haven't bookmarked a lot of TikToks.
September 2022.
Okay.
That's when the QR codes happened, and he came back October 8th for Extreme Rules.
Okay. So,
and this LA Knight story, by the way, I didn't even realize this. November 11th is when Bray Wyatt interrupted LA Knight's interview.
Why? But why?
So this story has been going on since November 11th.
Like, to my knowledge, there has never been an explanation of why. Why LA, like, I don't know. I it pains me to say it, but I've been very disappointed with, I'm not disappointed with Bray Wyatt's work himself. Like, his promos, great character, awesome. Like, the fact that he came out and he had like the eyes, it's like a different mask, the teeth, fucking great. Loved it. It sucks that he got stuck with like an advertisement match. I think that like cheapens the mystique around his character, but I don't know. I needed a storyline that kind of like was more of a callback to when he was the Fiend or the Man in the Woods. And I needed it to progress quicker than it did / it has. Cause we still fucking, there's still no answers really. Like, Uncle Howdy pulled a Shane McMahon, jumped off that balcony and missed by a mile. Like, thank God for camera angles. Cause he wasn't even close to hitting LA Knight.
No.
But why is Uncle Howdy attacking LA Knight after the match? Why? Like, I don't know. I need more, like, land the plane, please. Because obviously there's going to be some sort of alliance or some sort of feud. Like, I want to get to that point to where it's like, okay, now we go. Now that we've established the characters, now we've established the when, why, and how, now we go. Because all this right now is just fucking bullshit to me.
So I think the people don't want to work with Bray Wyatt thing is real. I think there's an element, if they push Bray Wyatt too strongly, people will want him to be the world champion again. And even though it would tie a loop with the Roman story, because Roman got the belt off of Bray Wyatt in the three-way match, I don't think that WWE Creative wants Bray anywhere near the belt, because of what you say is nobody leaves a Bray Wyatt feud better. And you don't want to put the belt on him, because now you have a Goldberg situation where here's Saudi Arabia paying $50 million and they want Goldberg as the champion. And so Bray Wyatt's going to go in there and sandbag Goldberg because he doesn't want to lose the belt, but yet he's getting paid a stupid amount of money to drop a replica, not a replica belt, but a piece of leather and gold plates, right? it's a business, right? And, you know, attitudes happen, and I get that. Egos, get it. But I think those are the biggest reasons, is they don't want to push him too strongly for the belt. They don't, people don't want to work with him. I think Ronda Rousey had those issues, has those issues where people don't want to work with her. And I think that's why she quit the company, allegedly.
That's like recently?
Yeah, I supposedly she dropped the belt to Charlotte to go away.
Where was that last premium live event that was in Boston? She had a match. It stunk.
War Games. It was against Shotzi.
Yeah, it sucked. That
it was terrible. Because yeah. Ronda's return has been terrible. Her comeback at the Rumble a year ago was good, but Charlotte essentially slipped on a banana peel and eliminated herself, mm-hmm. right? She misses the boot in the corner and she outs herself. Their match at WrestleMania in Dallas was good. Their return match at Backlash in Providence was outstanding. Everything since then has been a miss. Her match with Natty at Money in the Bank was eh. The cash in on Liv was Ronda's suggestion. Mm-hmm. And allegedly she had to fight Vince on it because Vince wasn't sure about Liv. Ronda really didn't want the belt back from Liv, but it was kind of pushed because the networks wanted Ronda as the champion. And I think the road schedule got to Ronda Rousey, which was a concern when she came back. One of the reasons why she only spent a year in WWE was she was on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think she burned out again. And she wasn't even working the same schedule that she was her first run. But I think Ronda's a weird type of person. And I think her vision of what she wanted to do with the character both times didn't line up with what WWE wanted to do with the character.
And she's also very sensitive too. So yes, I think when she gets booed as an intended babyface, she's made enough money, she's famous enough to do other things where I'm sure her attitude is like, fuck this, I don't need it.
Ironically enough, Cody Rhodes is the same way. He does not want to be booed. Well, he wants to be.
That lines up with him
hero.
Literally leaving AEW the second that he's getting booed as a babyface.
Yep. He does not want to be booed. He wants to be able to go out there, get cheered, have the kids love him, have the adults cheer him. Like, that's the vibe on Cody.
I could see that.
So you've been around enough wrestlers, Jared, where some of them are like secretly sensitive to everything. Mm-hmm. And there are others who don't care. And they're like, we're in it to make money. What, like Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, they're in it for the money. They're in it for the story. Mm-hmm. They want, yeah, like Sami wants to be world champion, but if he doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Owens got his Universal title. He got his main event with Steve Austin. He's like, I'm good. I'm going to make money now. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who need to be the champion. They need to be cheered. They need to be booed. Like things like that. There's a great AEW thing that I was talking with a friend about. I was talking with my friend Amir about this. Is when Danielson and Punk came into AEW, Punk came in and was like, I want to work with all the young guys. I want to watch them grow. I want to help them. And he ends up being the world champion, disgruntled, and he's now on hiatus. Danielson came in and was like, oh, I want to be the world champion. I want to wrestle every week. And he's the guy who's helping all the young guys. Mm-hmm. So there's a weird dynamic there with people's intents and what's actually their intents.
Has he been champion yet?
Danielson has not been the champion.
Interesting.
He's lost all these big matches. Like he's going to probably lose to MJF in March in a 60-minute match. But I don't think Danielson cares. I think Danielson is still wrestling because AEW offered him money that when his wife Brie saw the contract, she was going to divorce him if he didn't take the contract.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Because Danielson doesn't strike me as somebody who needs the money, who wants the money.
No. He's lives like a very simplistic life.
Yeah. Which God bless him for it. And he's just worried about, you know, making fun of other people's penises in the locker room.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Exactly. Yeah. I've enjoyed his comeback.
I love Danielson.
Yeah.
We should probably get your thoughts on CM Punk. Because we haven't talked either on the air or we've talked casually off the air about CM Punk, but like, do you think he's coming back to AEW?
I do.
You
do?
I do too.
I almost sent him a message yesterday. But you know what? I didn't send him the message yesterday was because, like, it crossed my mind. I forget, like, someone was talking to me about the Cubs, and then it kind of like jogged my brain to be like, let me reach out to Punk and like see how he's doing. Because even though he hasn't tweeted since June and he hasn't liked to tweet since June, he gets back pretty quick on Twitter. Like, I reached out to him probably. Probably in the fall sometime, and he got back right away. So he's like looking at Twitter. He's just not touching anything.
Participating.
Yes. So I almost sent him a message, and then I pulled up YouTube, and on my recommended page was Seth Rollins' interview where he called Punk a cancer.
Doesn't want him in WWE, which I think was half serious, half character.
I don't know that it wasn't how he really feels, because I remember me and Robbie interviewed him and I can't remember the full context of the question or the conversation, but I said, like, I think I brought it up and I said something like, you know, we don't have to mention his name or anything. And he was like, why not? Why don't we just say his name? And he like went off on Punk, and this had to have been over a year ago. So I genuinely don't think Seth Rollins does not like CM Punk in real life.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
So like Punk would go up to a media scrum and say, if I fall, my friends will catch me. Colby Lopez wouldn't, I feel, and do the whole Scott Colton promo all over again.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins.
I butchered
that joke. I'm sorry.
To me, having that interaction with Seth Rollins would lead me to believe that the dislike for Punk is genuine. Yeah. So I immediately was like, I don't want him to think that I'm reaching out because I saw this, because I'm sure other people are probably reaching out to him right now being like, hey, did you see this? And how do you feel about that? Like, I didn't want him to think that I was messaging him to be like, hey, what's up? So that I can build up to be like, did you see that thing about Seth Rollins? So I just left it alone and I didn't reach out. But
ironically enough, it's the Nick Hausman guy who, for context, I didn't know who the fuck Nick Hausman was until that press conference in Chicago where I'm in the room and like, why is he doing this to this guy? Like, who is this guy? And then you do all the backstory research and you're like, oh, he's Chicago based. He covered the trial with Punk and Colt Cabana. Mm-hmm. He apparently did improv with Colt Cabana. So there's something there with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, Jared, I was in the room at the time and I still can't. This still blows my mind. Like, I'm one of 9 media members in the room at the time. And Punk's just won the world title in his hometown. And he's beaten John Moxley clean for the first time in AEW. And he's got a promo on Colt Cabana because of something else.
Mm-hmm.
Just mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
And now we sit here all these months later and we're like, did he know how badly he was hurt? And was this some type of story that's going to build to something else?
I don't think that it was a story.
I don't think so either, but
it will be now. When he comes back, they're not going to just forget about this. Like, they're going to make money off of it, because I think it's going to be a white hot storyline to make money off of. And like, it's not the first time that something happened in real life where professional wrestling was like, let's use this, you know.
MJF
has done it. I mean, like, the first thing that comes to mind is like the Matt Hardy Lita Edge thing, where, you know, Matt Hardy legit got released and then they brought him back on the technicality that you get to work with Edge now. Like, we're going to make some money from all this drama. And
Matt's smart enough to know where the money is. So he'll
Yeah. And I think with Punk, I definitely know it's not about the money. Him coming back, I don't think it's about the money. I think if anything, a lot of the stuff that I've seen come out from actual people in AEW, they've spoken glowingly of him, like behind the scenes. Like, it's not like, when he gets called a locker room cancer, it paints the picture of a guy that isn't welcome and that other performers are like, thank God he's gone, or please don't fucking come back here. And that's just not the truth. I'm sure that there are some people there that maybe were rubbed the wrong way by the situation. They have a loyalty to Kenny Omega and the Bucks. I'm sure there is an element of that. But what I can tell you is it's not a universally held opinion that we don't want him back, we don't like him, fuck him. It's just not, that's just not the truth. So I do hope that he comes back. If he does come back, to me, it's got to be more of like a, like, I need this. Like, if you're Punk being like, I need to come back, like, I can't go out like that. His whole life, his whole fucking life. Like, CM Punk is not one of these dudes that got cut from the fucking practice squad in the NFL and got picked up and sent to the performance center and like, hey, well, like, let's do a career pivot to professional wrestling. CM Punk is a guy that has always wanted to be and became one of the best professional wrestlers in the world. And in the four major sports, some legends do go out like that. Like, some of the greatest ever, just like, 1 second you're on top of the world, the next second you suck and you get released, and that's it. You didn't get to tell them when you were done. You were told that you were done. In professional wrestling, you have the opportunity to say when you're done. And I don't think that Punk's body obviously didn't hold up super fantastic in his first run in AEW. I'm not going to sit here and say that he was a clean bill of health. He was not, and he would tell you the same. But I do not think that he's at the point of physical health like Edge, who was told you're done. And he ultimately came back anyway. Stone Cold Steve Austin, same thing. Lita, same thing. So I think that if you were to ask him why, if you were to come back, why are you coming back? It's legacy more than money. It's trying to right a wrong, even though he may not feel like he was in the wrong. I think it was kind of like the truth was somewhere in the middle. I think both sides were probably wrong on that one. But I find it extremely hard to believe that we've seen CM Punk appear on AEW television for the last time, or just professional wrestling. We haven't seen his last match. We haven't seen his last appearance on some sort of wrestling promotion's premier television program.
I always figured he'd work a New Japan show at the Tokyo Dome, because I feel like that's kind of one of his things. But like, I feel like the timeline lines up where if he were to come back, it would be Labor Day again in Chicago, and he'd get a huge ovation. And that's when they could do, if everybody was willing to do business, that's where they do the Young Bucks and Omega versus CM Punk and FTR.
Well, because even before this, like, the crowd turned on him.
Oh, yeah.
He was not the shiny new toy anymore. He was not.
I think around the time of the MJF story.
Correct.
Is when people were like, are we sure about Punk? And then he gets in the ring with Adam Page, and that kind of goes a little wonky. And then it's like, oh, Punk's the world champion. And the metrics and the creative would lead to this point. But whereas, and this is one of the things that AEW is doing really well with their women's division right now, is the AEW fan base is such a niche, we want our homegrown guys. And so Adam Page versus CM Punk didn't make sense from a fan base story perspective, I think, because it's a homegrown guy against the WWE guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have the WWE guy go over, and the WWE people keep going over all of the homegrown guys. So it's like, what are you doing now? AEW's Labor Day weekend pay-per-view this past year was Jericho versus Danielson and Punk versus Moxley.
Yeah.
And granted, they're different characters than they were in WWE, but they're WWE guys.
Literally the invasion angle backwards.
Right. And now what AEW is doing with their women's division is, The WWE people in Paige, Saraya, Toni Storm, Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, there's now this division, and it's like, where's Ruby Soho going to go? And where is this character going to go? And it's a good play off of it, because the reaction for Saraya has dimmed down a lot, in the same way that the Punk reaction kind of dimmed down. And that's what you got. I was so interested, Jared, to see what I think was going to end up being a double turn with Punk and MJF. I think Punk was going to go on the villain side and MJF was going to try to be a babyface. and then it would have swerved back the way it ended up with MJF as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was so interested in seeing where that was going to go, but we never got there. Maybe we get there in the future, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think with MJF, I mean, this is obviously a Royal Rumble reaction pod, but
that's okay
to go into a whole AEW angle.
When we got into the second hour of the podcast, Jared, it became what's on Jared's wrestling agenda.
Yeah, so I have become a huge MJF honk because I was at the show on Long Island when he came back. That had to have been almost 2 years ago now, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it was not this past summer, but the summer before. I can't remember, but big MJF guy, and I'll always gravitate towards the performers that live and die kayfabe. Did I tell you the story about Big Cass, by the way?
You may have off the air, but please share it on the air if you're comfortable with it.
Okay, so AEW's in town. When was that? November,
in Boston, maybe? Or Long Island?
In Boston.
So the date on that would have been November 9th.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah, because it's right before I left for vacation. So AEW's in Boston. I think they probably got in. The show was on
Tuesday.
Wednesday.
They would have. Yeah, okay. Show's on Wednesday. They get in on Tuesday usually.
Okay, so they get in on Tuesday. And it was later at night. It was probably like, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And Cass hits me up. He's like, I'm in Boston. He's like, where can I go to the gym this late? And I was like, my apartment. I was like, I have a gym in my apartment. And he was like, yeah.
Great answer.
He's like, can we work out there? And I was like, yeah. He's like, can you pick us up? I was like, sure. So I go over to their hotel. Him and Lexi, and congratulations, by the way, they're engaged now. Pick them up, and I'm waiting outside the like in my car, but I can see into the lobby, and just fucking Mark Henry's walking around, Jeff Jarrett's walking around, like I'm seeing like Eddie Kingston. I'm like, what the hell's going on? They were
and
all
there,
just...
by the way, and Jared, not the, I'm being rude and interrupting, but they're just coming back from the Kowloon, I think.
Probably, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So they're all walking around in the lobby, and they come out. We go back. Cass works out with me at my apartment. We're talking life, and he's just a fucking great dude. Like I could not say enough great things about him as a human being. So then. The next night I'm sitting front row ringside at AEW.
Thank you for that.
And me and Jimmy Stewart, this is my pay it forward moment. Jimmy Stewart in 2015. Was that Extreme Rules?
It was TLC.
TLC. December 2015?
Yep, that sounds right.
Brought me down ringside for TLC in 2015, an experience that I'll never forget. RIP Brody. That was one of the best moments right there. Just going through a table right in front of our faces. Still,
and Tommy Dreamer giving us the warning of what might happen next.
Yeah, Tommy Dreamer set up a table right in front of us, and he was like, just be careful, guys. I don't even work here. So we were ringside, and Cass is working a match, but he's not in the match. He's the burner on the outside. And Jimmy sees Cass and like points him out to me. So, or points me out to Cass. So he sees I'm sitting ringside. So I'm expecting, I was like, yeah, like we just worked out last night. Like we fucking keep in touch all the time. Like I've taken him to Fenway. We're like really good friends. So I'm expecting him to like walk over after the match is over and the cameras are off to like come give me a hug, dap me up, something. He walks up to me. He's like, Red Sox suck, bitch. And then walks in the back, and that's it. Just like totally keeping it kayfabe. I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was caught off guard. I was not expecting that to happen. But it was fucking great. I loved it. And and then he brought me backstage, which, by the way, that experience is kind of what made me calm for the town hall winter weekend thing that I just did for the Red Sox, because backstage at AEW, it looked exactly the same as backstage at this town hall thing. So like when I was back there, there was no oohs and ahs. I was like, I've already done this with like Daniel Bryan and Bryan Danielson. And yeah, so that was cool. But what was my main point? Because I was saying I love when guys...
MJF still is in character.
Yes. So the fact that, you know, MJF never breaks character, ever. It's not even just, oh, we're at the arena. I just saw a TikTok the other day where he was being a dick to fans in the lobby of his hotel. They were all congregating in front of like the elevators, and MJF hit the floor that he was going up to. And he sees these like autograph hounds are behind him. The door opens and some guy is like kind of like walking with him to get in the elevator with him. And he just turns and looks at the guy. And he's like, if you get in this elevator with me, I will beat the shit out of you. And then the guy's like, whoa, okay. And he like backs off. And then there's other people that want to get in the elevator to ride up. Like they need to go to the floor that they're going to. No one gets in the elevator. MJF gets in the elevator by himself and then goes up to his room alone. So awesome. I love it. Like when he does his meet and greets, the supercut videos of MJF, like someone will be like, hey, like, you know, my 9-year-old cousin is a big fan. Like, can you send him a video? And he'd be like, hey, Tucker, heard you're a big fan. I don't give a shit. Go fuck yourself. It's like to a 9-year-old kid. And
you should watch his cameos. He charges $500 for cameo.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And they post some of them for nothing. Like you can do public or private cameos. Okay. So the ones that are public are tremendous. They're hysterical.
I know
one time he's broken character.
When?
So I shouldn't tell this story, but I will. So before there was an AEW show back in April 6th.
Okay.
And Andy Wong. This was when we did the video when you found out that you were officially signed to DraftKings, you could announce it and all that.
Yep.
Andy Wong got to go backstage as a guest of somebody. Mm-hmm. And MJF respectfully acknowledged Andy Wong.
I mean, that, if you're going to break kayfabe for any guy in the world, it's Andy Wong. Like he's the tribal chief of... I would say harvesting professional wrestlers. Like everyone that's listening to this right now, you've either been to Kowloon or you know of Kowloon.
Yeah.
It's because of Andy Wong.
It's because of Bobby Wong. It's because of pro wrestling. A lot of it. But that's the only time that I know that MJF has broken character for somebody that isn't within like, you know, the production room of like, you know, he's talking to Jericho about their program or whatever. So that's the only time is MJF properly acknowledged Andy Wong. And I hope I'm not telling a story out of school, but whatever, if I am.
Like, well, it's not on camera. So for all you know, or for all the listeners know, that could be a complete lie. MJF, I don't feel like would ever break character on camera. No,
I don't think so. Although I think though, like we would get a kick out of if MJF went up to Andy and was like, motherfucker, your Chinese food blows.
Yeah.
But Andy would be like, what did I do here? And we'd be Andy would love it.
Yeah.
I think so, but I don't know.
Yeah. We're not gonna name names, but there is one person who was very disrespectful to Andy Wong, and I will never be a fan of theirs for the rest of my life.
I understand. And that Ever. Person doesn't spend a lot of Monet when... I understand.
I'll never be a fan of theirs because of that.
I understand. We witnessed it, and yeah. That was still a good night, though. That was a good night at the
Kowloon. It was a great night. I've never had a bad night at Kowloon.
I haven't either.
Let's go to Kowloon soon.
Yeah, let's do Kowloon soon. Absolutely. Okay.
Let's do that before baseball season starts and things get crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Are you going down to spring training, by the way?
Like three different times.
Okay.
I'm doing like 5 days in Arizona, 5 days in Fort Myers, and then I think we're doing like 3 days separately in Miami on like a completely different trip.
Are you getting back into the Nesson? We might as well talk baseball here. Are you getting back into the Nesson color analyst booth? Are you going to do any games in the booth with OB or Lou or Will Middlebrooks or anything?
As far as that role, I've let them know that I would love to do kind of like the Alex Spear role.
Got it.
Like, I'd love to pop in for like an inning at a time. I don't ever want to
do nine innings.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's not even that, like, I don't think I can do it. I just want to be able to be me during the games. Like, I feel like I can't be me on an MLB broadcast, and I don't want to conform to be something that I'm not to fit what you want me to be. But I feel like I can goof off for an inning. Like, I can do that. I also don't have any interest.
I also think, Jared, you love cuss words.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're meaning to be disrespectful in your usage of them. They're just part of your vernacular.
Correct.
That's how you talk.
Correct.
And so for an inning for 10 minutes, you cannot say a cuss word.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to do 4 hours, the producer has to have their finger on that dump button.
Look at McAfee last night. Who did he call a bitch? He called someone a bitch.
So he called somebody a bitch.
I think it was Bobby Lashley or someone. It was someone that he said Suplex City bitch.
Oh, so Suplex City,
which is a
City
callback
bitch
to like
from
what Brock said. Yeah, originally. Yes. That's where it came from.
Yes.
The
one that got me was
he called said, Peacock the cock.
If you're yes.
And then I saw someone, one of like the YouTubers that I watch, WrestleMania, they thought that he like misspoke and meant to say the clock. I was like, no. Pat McAfee called Peacock the cock.
The cock.
He meant that. That's
yeah.
That's exactly what he meant to say.
It's a rooster.
Yeah.
We do that on the radio. We're like, oh, we're watching the hockey game on the cock.
Yeah.
Peacock Network. What did you think I said?
Right.
It's a rooster. Obviously. Yeah.
By the way, I popped very hard for Pat McAfee coming back.
Oh, he's great.
Born to do it. Wish he could do it. Like, there's part of me that wishes he could do it year round. But the other part of me is like, dude, good for fucking you that you have created a life for yourself where you can do your own show, which is a mega success. Then you can do the college football show at ESPN. Then you can go call the Royal Rumble. Like, you kidding me? Like, that it's basically what I do on a significantly smaller scale. Like, I can do my show with Dallas, and I can do my show with Milliken, the Red Sox show, the MLB show. Then if I want to do some stuff with Nesson, I can. If I want to do some stuff with MLB Network, I can. And even I can do a little bit of stuff with WWE, and then I can go do stuff with Maz and Jimmy Stewart at the Sports Hub. Like, I can do a little bit of everything, but that's why selfishly I wish that McAfee was always on WWE, but I totally get it. Like, you want to do a little bit of everything that makes you happy. I'm in the same boat. Like, but I am doing all that stuff year round. Like, there's nothing that's like stopping me or preventing me from doing something whenever I want to be doing it. But he has just manifested this all time life for himself. And I'm so happy for him.
I'm a huge fan of McAfee. And I asked you privately, like, what kind of dude he was when you guys worked together at Barstool, and you told me good things. So I was happy about that.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because if you look at Pat McAfee's desk and you look at Pat McAfee's profile photo and you look over my my left shoulder, you see a similar photo. When I was in Dallas, I snapped the photo that sits on Pat McAfee's Twitter profile and his desk. It's a photo of him drinking
that you
with
took?
Steve Austin. Yep, that's a photo I took.
Really?
Yep, so that's my connection.
I never knew that.
McAfee. Yep, I have the original file. And there's a part of me that wants to send my legal team after him for using it illegally just so I can get an interview with him. But I don't want to do that because I have too much respect for him.
This picture of him drinking beers with Stone Cold, you took that? Yep,
I did take that.
That's incredible.
It is. I'll tell you what, Jared, if you ever get to sit that close, I was row 10 at WrestleMania. Like,
yeah.
I don't think anything will. Like, and for a really good WrestleMania too, by the way.
Yeah, it's a great WrestleMania.
Where is this? I want to show you the original file so that you know that I'm not bullshitting you.
Oh, I know that you're telling the truth. I've never known you to lie to me.
I don't think I have.
Probably not.
I hope not.
There it is. Is that a live photo? You're a live photo guy.
Let me get rid of that. It should be a live photo guy. It usually does work, but yeah, it's got the, if you do the live photo thing, it like crashes the beers.
That's amazing. Yep, there it is.
There it is.
Yep. You're a big live photo guy.
I am, because then I can edit it because it's the producer in me. So,
all right.
Anything else on your wrestling agenda or anything you want to promote here before, you know, we get to hour number three, which would be the longest podcast in the history of this podcast. I'm like, I'll shoot the breeze with Jared for an hour about the Rumble. And then we got to the hour and I'm like, well, what else do you want to talk about wrestling wise? I'm here. I got time. You got time.
Like I said, I've been dying to talk wrestling in an expanded podcast form for a long time. I think I am going to be doing a wrestling podcast, but not like this.
I love this idea, by the way.
Yes. So I want to have you involved. Like if you're able to do, if you want to pick it out, like one of the shows or whatever, or as often as you want to do it. Actually, you know what? I'm going to save it. I'm going to save what it is.
That's why I was like, I love this idea, because I know what this idea is and you can do with it what you want. But
yeah,
I love this idea. I will participate if, you know, scheduling all matches up and
yeah.
The idea, I can execute and help the idea as best I can.
Yes. I'm
because this is a great idea and I don't want to be the Rock and half ass it.
Right. So. There you go. You're gonna show up in the best physical condition.
Of course.
So be on the lookout for that.
I will. Jared Karabas, my longtime friend. I'm happy that we got to talk wrestling on a public forum. This won't be the last time in 2023 that we talk wrestling.
Probably not.
At least in a public forum, but you're at DraftKings now.
You after this.
Oh, excellent. I love it. You work for DraftKings. You're the tribal chief of baseball. You have America's most beloved podcast in the name Redacted, which I listen to weekly, although I missed a couple episodes this week. Tyler gave me the cliff notes of them. Tyler Milliken, I'm a huge fan of. I love Tyler. I think he's going to be, I'm glad that you two linked up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that he's doing so well for the name Redacted podcast, America's most beloved podcast. I feel like that should be a t-shirt.
I think we're probably gonna do that because we're officially, it still says Jared Karabas podcast, which I fucking hate. Like I never liked that. I never wanted it. It was always a placeholder. So I think we're officially switching to name Redacted, which means we can come out with merch and we can do all that shit. So
that's great. And one little kind of detail that as we close here, like Baseball is Dead is the name of your podcast with Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a playoff of all these people who make fun of, you know, baseball being dead and everything. So like when Wrestling Inside the Ropes came to an end, like what's a new name for this wrestling podcast? And so people on Twitter tell me all the time to stick to wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to use the same idea and make money off of it. So that's what I did in the same way that you did Baseball is Dead. So you have that. Inspired that.
I love
and,
that.
And I am proud to say that you're my friend. You're one of my great friends. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your time. And, you know, I'll give you the last word here, Jared.
I'm anytime that you want me back, all you got to do is let me know. And the fact that you thought that this wasn't going to go at least 2 hours or close to it is just a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is that I do. We go hours and hours and hours. Like
I know
forever on a podcast, especially something that I'm super passionate about. And the fact that I have not had the opportunity to talk wrestling, especially with you, like I feel like if we wanted to, we could probably do like another 2 hours and then look up and be like,
yeah,
absolutely. All right, like what else do you want to talk about? And like, keep going. So whenever you want me back, happy to do it. This was a lot of fun, and thank you for thinking of me for this.
And we, you know, we sat at the Kowloon one night, and we drank tea for like 4 hours.
Yeah,
and we just shot the breeze about everything.
Yeah, that was the night that it hit me for the first time that the night, remember the night that they sat us in the section with all the wrestlers?
Yep.
So that was the night that I found out that they call each other their stage names, even when they're at Kowloon, apparently. Like, yeah. Some of them, I've noticed they use their real name. Like, I've heard wrestlers call Bray Wyatt Wyndham, but like Sheamus, like there's a lot of guys like the Big Show, they'll call him Show. What was the other one that was like pretty interesting? I mean, like Roman, they call him Roman instead of Joe. I don't know. It's Seth Rollins. They call
him Seth. It's such a weird dynamic, Jared. Like, it's this choreographed entertainment. And they're like, if I were to go up to Keith or Sutherland and I worked with him, like, Jack, what up, Bauer? What up, Jack Bauer? Like, it'd be like, weird.
What the fuck's your problem? Yeah.
But here it's kind of like, so I was in the Survivor Series press conference and Triple H is up there talking and he's introduced to us as Paul Levesque.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm asking my question, I say, congratulations on such a wonderful show, Paul. And the internet is like, what the fuck? You're calling him Paul. Why are you doing that? And it's like, well, that's his real name. And that's how he's introduced to us.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like I can.
Yeah, Byron Saxton introduced him as Paul Triple H Levesque.
Yeah, so that means, Paul, congratulations on the show. Thank you. And then you go on.
If I were in your position, not to say that what you did was wrong, if it were me, how I would have done it, I probably would have called him Hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, like,
I don't think you're wrong, by the way. I don't think there is a right answer to this. This is the whole CM Punk thing. Like, if you're meeting CM Punk, what do you call him?
Punk.
You don't call him Phil because he'll get pissed at you.
Yeah.
Unless he's told you to call him Phil.
Yeah.
You don't call him CM because that's kind of weird. You don't call him Chick Magnet. You
kind of call him Punk. Call him CM. Yeah, I just call him Punk.
Or you just say, hello, sir.
He is the prime example of like when it gets confusing. Because he'll even say, like, only my friends call me Punk. So I was like, all right, I can't call you Phil because that's disrespectful as well. I was like, I don't know. What's up, dog? Like,
yeah, so, that's exactly it.
Yeah. The other one was Undertaker. When I interviewed the Undertaker, I was like, what do I call you? Like, I know your name's Mark. I'm not going to call you Mark. I can't be like, hello, the Undertaker, or like,
hello,
Undertaker.
Mr. Taker.
Yeah. So he, that's what he arrived on. He's like, you can just call me Taker or Take. He's like, we're friends now. My friends call me Taker or Take, and you can call me that. And I was like, all right, cool, Mark. Mr. Calloway.
I do miss From the Top Rope, the podcast you used to do with Robbie Fox at Barstool. Yeah. Like, I thought it was great. Like, you guys had great guests, you guys had great conversation. Yeah. So it's a wrestling podcast that I do miss. It was my favorite podcast, even though I was doing one locally.
Yeah, it was a blast. Like, those were some of the funnest times that I think I had at Barstool, was doing the wrestling podcast with Robbie. Because, like, you know, with baseball, you meet some of the players and, you know, you find out some of them are dicks, or some of them are just like, they become your friends in real life. So it's like, there's no like oohs and ahs about them anymore. And then you kind of get to the point where it's like, you know, you're older than some of the stars in the league. And it's like, it's weird to like fangirl over like a player that's like 24. And it's like, all right, I'm 33. But then like, I can still keep the fan element of WWE. And at War Games, I was backstage and I shot that video with a bunch of the guys backstage and girls, asking them to do like their favorite player's batting stance and then grade it. And everyone was so kind. Like, no one big leagued me because they don't know me. Like, I had never met any of them really, or some of them. Like, I had met some of them. Like, Corey Graves is fucking awesome. He's a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. I roasted him and they cut it out of the video. But you know how like Corey Graves, he every time they introduce him, he like puts his hands together like he's praying and then bows. I was like, Corey Graves here, Pittsburgh Pirates fan. You know, is that thing that you do, like, whenever they introduce you with your hands, are you always like praying for like a winning season for the Pittsburgh Pirates? Because it's not working.
that's great.
I did something with him. Like, Damian Priest was really cool.
He's great.
Diehard Yankee fan, but like,
Great
he's,
dude.
He's old enough to have remembered and like lived through legitimate championships, not just like the 2009 one. But yeah, no, Dominic Mysterio, he was really cool. Like,
and this was before he became a hardened criminal.
Yes, this was pre-jail. This was pre-jail, but post betraying Ray. Yeah, but like you just don't get that. Like, you know, there are definitely some teams that you like the Yankees, not that like I'm not using that as an example just because I'm a Red Sox fan, but like the Yankees, like you can't just walk up to Aaron Judge and strike up a conversation. They'll like keep you away from him and he just doesn't do stuff. How many interviews have you seen, unless it's like Jimmy Fallon or something like that?
Right.
They just protect their guys. WWE, you can go up to anyone, just start talking to them, and they're fucking great guys. Like they're so humble and down to earth. Like in terms of like, cause even when I did like those Super Bowl trips, Arizona and I forgot the other one. Where did I go? Houston? Yeah, I don't know.
One of the Florida ones.
Yeah, I don't remember. I went to a couple Super Bowls.
You're still banned from the Super Bowl anyway, so there's
yeah, that's true. Yeah. But like you do all these like Super Bowl weeks and you come across all kinds of famous people. And some of them just they act like, you know, they're bigger and better than you. And maybe that's true. Maybe, you know, there's some people that are they're just like super famous and that's just how they live their life. And if that's how you choose to live your life, that's fine. I just have not come across that in the professional wrestling world. I just haven't. Like it's very much like the NHL. Like hockey players, I've only come across one hockey player that thought that he was like better than me. And it was because I like stole some girl that he was trying to like go home with. And I was like, sorry, pal. He's actually like legitimately like one of the biggest like stars in hockey. And I felt great that night. But that's the only time I ever had an interaction with like an NHL guy that was like it was just weird tension. But like WWE guys, awesome.
Yeah, WWE people are superb. They go above and beyond because at the end of the day, they're trying to sell themselves to you, so you'll go tell 200 people how great they are.
Correct.
And you also buy their merchandise. It's mm-hmm. a whole like I don't mean this disrespectfully, because to a degree we as people in the media, we're all kind of carny-ish.
That's the exact comparison I was going to use. It's very like carnival-like, where it's like, hey, come in my tent. Come see what I got in over here. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I'll check out your tent. No problem.
And I'll buy a t-shirt. And you're going to follow me on Twitter? Yeah, I'll DM with you. Yeah, you want to give me your number? Yeah. You got a message you want to get out to the people? Yeah, of course. Like, I'm here at your service, sir or ma'am.
Yep. So I have very much enjoyed that.
And I haven't been in the Red Sox locker room in a long time. Mm-hmm. I think the last time I was in the room was it might have been the 2013 championship when they won. When Victorino came to the plate, we sang his song and then I Irish goodbye'd you.
Yep.
which was not on purpose, but I think the last time I was in the room was that night. But prior to that, there are only a handful of Red Sox players like Gabe Kapler, Sean Casey, who you could just randomly go up to and shoot the breeze with about anything. Sean Casey, by the way, huge wrestling fan, if you didn't know.
Hmm.
Somebody who I think you should hit up and talk baseball if you're on good terms with him, but he was a huge wrestling fan. I talked at length with him when he was with the team about wrestling just randomly. But the baseball culture is different and there's no culture. The WWE culture is great where everybody is generally personable. And, you know, unless you get Paul Heyman busting your balls on a podcast, which, you know,
I remember that. That was a great episode. That was excellent.
Or you get Liv Morgan flirting with you, which was tremendous.
That's
probably my favorite episode of last year.
Yeah. I, you know who my big crush is right now?
Alexa Bliss still or no?
No, I'm done with her. Ever since she married Ryan Cabrera, I'm done with her.
Yeah, I have a thought on Ryan Cabrera that I can't share with you on the podcast, so I'll share with you after we stop recording.
Okay, perfect. You know who my big crush is right now?
Who is it?
Kathy Kelly.
Oh, she's great. Oh, I met her recently. Met her at a charity event for the WWE. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
Good choice.
Yeah. Yeah, we met backstage, but like kind of we did, but didn't. We met backstage, super nice. And I love how she is Rhea Ripley's biggest fan. So she's like all of her like TikToks, and she makes TikToks and just is like fangirling over Rhea Ripley the whole time. And Rhea is not on TikTok. Roman just joined TikTok.
I saw that. Yeah.
But yeah, like her whole thing is like a pursuit to get Rhea Ripley on TikTok and just like loving Rhea Ripley. I'm like, this is the content that I signed up for.
There are a lot of people who love Rhea Ripley.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
I think she's tremendous. I think she's outstanding.
Yeah.
I think she's great. All right. Yeah. I want to tell you some stories off the air.
Okay.
So before I forget them, we're going to actually, like, we had a nice false finish 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, we did. We kicked out after the third F5.
So we're actually going to say goodbye. Jared Carabas, DraftKings, Tribal Chief of Baseball, great wrestling fan. Jared, thank you so much. We'll talk again soon in the future on the air. And
let's do it.
Now we'll talk off the air about all the good stuff.
Can't wait.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.